a part of every other thing we are. And that everything that appears and appears and disappears, comes and goes in our life, is supported, you could say, by emptiness. Supported by the complete connection that we are. It's hard to separate it out because there really isn't any separation. It's seamless. And when we talk about it, it gets to be chunky and clunky because we talk about things in terms of things and separate it out just with our words. And the words are trying to say there is no separation. So it's very paradoxical and very frustrating to try to talk about it all. They say form is life's manifestation. How life comes into being is with form, as form. Our form is life, and our life is in form. And as we know, we're constantly changing. Not only that, but our own bodies are filled with other creatures, other beings that sustain us and live through us and support our life. So that we can't even talk about our own body as being separate in any sense, really, because all the other beings that are a part of our life, the beings that live in our eyelashes and our eyebrows, the beings that live in our gut, without whom we cannot live. There are billions, billions of these people that we don't even know who they are. It's very humbling, this study. It's wonderfully humbling when we begin to realize how, when we say me, we don't really know what that is. We can't quite know what that is. Even in terms of how we think, when we say what we think, we've already thought it before intending to say and think it. The thinking comes out of us. The words, as we speak to each other, come out of us. And we don't know where they come from. We don't plan a sentence word by word very carefully and then say it. It would be a very awkward conversation if we did that. So somehow, seamlessly, out of the life of our life, we express ourselves in our terms as words, but in other beings it's in other ways. We saw a squirrel this afternoon that shook its tail really hard. It was trying to say something really hard. I think we're all expressing. Life expresses itself in so many different ways. But if we talk about life as manifestation, or manifestation of life in form, feelings, perceptions, impulses, consciousness, still there is a basis for all of this. The untalkaboutable part of it. The part that in our life as human beings comes with the question of where did we come from? What does it mean? What holds us and sustains life in the way that it does? How does it come and go like this? In human tradition, there have been many, many efforts to try to speak about it, and it always makes it small to say too many things about it. You really can't say. Some people say God. When I was a little girl, I would blush when people talked about God. I was so embarrassed. I thought, how can they say that? It's too big for a word like that. You can't possibly do that. So we don't say. We say emptiness. Or we say prajna. We say the wisdom and the truth that runs through all things. The kind of chaotic organization that somehow all these things that are working in such fantastic, intricate way keep on working. Despite the terrible things that happen, it's all burning up and coming back to life over and over and over again. This whole process. So the tendency is to think of emptiness as somewhere else, different from. And what the Heart Sutra is saying is that emptiness is form. It's not like form. It's not close to form. It's not that we work hard to get some kind of emptiness and put it on form. It's just that what we are, this moment, right here, now, is the force of all things, the life of all being. As we ourselves live and breathe, speak and walk, think, hope, dream, that what's authentic is just this. It's not someplace else. Mel Weitzman said, if you want to know what emptiness is, just take care of the form. Look for emptiness in its manifestation rather than by looking for something called emptiness. And I gave you some quotes and I've forgotten what they were. Red Pine said, basically the skandhas represent an attempt to exhaust the possible paths we might take in our search for a self, for something permanent or pure or separate in the undifferentiated flux of experience. There are five ways of considering our world and looking for something we can call our own. This is me, this is mine. And yet, if we really look, we can't say so. We say so provisionally, of course. But if we have any wisdom at all, we realize we can drop those ideas in a minute because they don't always apply. This is mine until I give it to you. This is mine until it breaks. This is mine until it's not mine anymore. Nothing belongs to us, really. We get the use of it for a little while, if we're lucky. He said, there are five ways of considering our world and looking for something we can call our own. This is why Avalokiteshvara looks upon the five skandhas. The five skandhas are the limit of reality. If we're going to find anything real, this is where we're going to find it. But no matter how often or how long or how intently we search through the skandhas, we come up empty-handed. And then this second quotation is very interesting. Musong just died this year, was a physicist as well as a teacher in the Korean tradition, and has a wonderful book on the Heart Sutra also. And he talks about it in terms of physics. And this is about, this is a little piece of a long piece that he wrote about how you take a piece of solid matter and look into it and get into the atoms, the molecules, and then the atoms, and then the gluons and the muons and the charm and all the things that, as physics has gone into what they thought was the smallest piece, they keep finding smaller and smaller and smaller things. And they're not finished with it yet. They've got the big collider in Switzerland now that they're trying to get up so they can find something even smaller. And he talks about the flesh. If you put a piece of our own body under an electron microscope, he says, every passing second, 2.5 million red cells are born, and the same second, the same number die. The typical cell lives 110 days and then becomes tired and decrepit. As magnification increases beyond the cells, the flesh begins to dissolve. Muscle fiber now takes on a fully crystalline aspect. We can see that muscles are made of long spiral molecules in orderly array, and all of these molecules are swaying like wheat in the wind, connected with one another and held in place by invisible waves that pulse many trillions of times a second. I think that's such a cool image. We think it's just a muscle. Just a muscle. So again, it's our how we see, how we're able to see. And of course, we long to see more and more deeply. But in truth, as well as being truly inspired by this kind of seeing, what we've begun to discover in our practice is there's another kind of seeing. That sitting itself is deep seeing. The kind that opens us to the truth of form being emptiness and emptiness being form. Just here, just as we are. That our practice itself opens us up to this truth, this Dharma. So as Koban always said, things do not exist without emptiness. Without emptiness, no existence. And yet if we say, what is that, then we can't really say exactly. Because it is, we, as so. So I know this is big, and a lifetime study. Every time I go into it, it's new to me again. I have to, you know, what does Red Pine say about it? You know, this is, it's so, it's such an incredible, and yet I think we're in touch with it as we practice. In touch with an experience of it that we really can't say. What I always call the untalkaboutable. So are there questions? Sharon?
And I guess my question is about emptiness. I guess I keep getting thrown off because emptiness has a kind of common meaning in
yes,
English.
Yes.
So is there some other word or few words, phrase that we can use instead of that, so
well,
that the word emptiness doesn't keep throwing me off because of its common meaning in English?
I'm all with you. I'm completely with you. I know because we're chanting it that way in the sutra, I said it that way.
Oh,
but,
of course.
But it's, I think, like dharma, which is a Sanskrit name, that shunyata is the word for emptiness, that we could just use that and not try to translate it into an English that is so misleading, because it doesn't mean empty.
So what does it mean, even in a phrase? Because shunyata doesn't...
Well, it means that besides everything that we can see and experience, that there is something that can't be seen and experienced, but that can't, that can, that infuses all, as all.
So it'd be sort of like space, which of course is another English word.
Well, sometimes they use a cup, an empty cup, that the cup and the emptiness on the inside of it is all of a piece. It wouldn't be a cup if it were filled up with clay. It has to be scoured out in order to be a cup. So, but you see, it's so hard to say.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good image. Okay, thank you. Julia?
Could the term emptiness be getting at, like, I don't know, more intimate relation? Like, I used to think empty, you know, like, it's so easy to kind of get nihilistic about this term emptiness. I mean,
yes.
Kind of put that weight on the word, but it's like the secret, you know, the secret, it's like, you know, whatever we could bring into our lives using the power of our mind, anything our heart desires, that kind of thing. To me, it's kind of solipsistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just this notion that anything you feel, you know, whatever, like, it's all about you, but I think the notion of emptiness, to me, that kind of brings another,
yes,
there, like, almost like osmosis, like this thing. I don't know.
Well, I think your word intimacy is a good one, and you could think of that phrase, not knowing is the most intimate, as a way of talking about this also. When you allow yourself not to know, then you're accessible to all in a way that when you're trying to figure things out and talk about it, you're not.
But the whole, like, if you make this habit of not knowing, it's almost solipsistic in the other, because sometimes maybe you do know, like, it's kind of like, it strikes me as like, you know, how you could sense with a person false modesty or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
So it's when you get yourself out of the way. That's the main point about this.
Right. And there's
and as long as the self is in the way, you're going to get all those strange arguments that just go around and around and around. So it's the question about the self. That's the trick.
The trick for what?
The trick about suffering. That as long as you've got a self in the way, you're going to be bumping up against a lot of trouble, a lot of difficulty for yourself. And the more ease you have is the more ease that you're free of that limitation of self.
And how would you tie that in with the notion of emptiness, selflessness?
It's about not knowing, being willing to drop all your preconceptions and judgments and allow whatever your new situation is to inform you, to tell you what it is.
The relation between...
Yes, the relation between anything, people, between a blade of grass. Tell me your truth, grass. What are you? Who are you? We're meeting. Instead of saying, oh, it's just grass. Put your foot on it. Ron?
Sometimes I use the term void as in void consciousness. It's just an alternative. There are ways to visualize it by just realizing that. If you could see, if you were to let God microscope, you could focus down on substance and realize that it's smaller and smaller particles, and you get down to the atom, and there's protons and electrons and neutrons, and then there's even smaller.
Yeah.
And I guess the further they get with these colliders, they find even smaller ones. I don't know what happens when they find the ones that they thought were the smallest. They're even smaller, or they don't even exist, according to some sort of mathematical, physical theory about quarks. That, you know,
they're trying to make a black hole.
They
are.
They come and go. Oh, you know, they're here and they're not.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Thank you. Francois?
Getting back to physics, I've been having trouble with this form and emptiness. But it's a very cool concept in physics, the uncertainty principle.
Mm-hmm.
The more you know one thing, the less you know the other.
Yes.
And you can never know the two things at the same time. So maybe that's this form and emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Always have to let go of something.
Exactly. Ah, thank you.
Does that mean that multitasking doesn't work? I can never carry a conversation and listen to somebody else. I know it's funny, but is it true?
Well,
thank you.
There have been studies that have shown that it really doesn't work. People think they can do it, but they really don't do either job very well.
It's like talking on the phone while you're driving. You think you're doing fine, but you're really not. You're driving like a drunk.
Right.
So I would think that, in fact, in our practice, the whole hope is that we can give ourselves completely to each thing that we're doing, so that even if we're slicing an onion, that we're really being there with the onion. And if we're also talking on the phone and stirring the cake batter and, you know, changing the diaper, it doesn't work very well. You're not there, or you haven't given yourself into the situation. But that's what we do, of course, because we're always in such a hurry. I think that really is a plague for us, the hurry that we're in. And we're just rushing to our death. Sooner than later, so what a waste. It's after 8 o'clock. There's a beautiful cake sitting in front. I was bowing to the cake. I thought, oh, this is incredible. Did you bring that, Samia?
Yeah, it came by itself.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. Can we eat it right here, right now?
Absolutely.
Super.
There's apples in it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Fabulous. Those are from your tree, too, a bit.
Yeah. Kind of half water since the rain flooded them, kind of. But they're still good, you know.
Yeah.
If you take a bike, it's a good way to meditate on an apple. You can see how the water is kind of around the middle, and some of it is okay. They're happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Well, let's do a 1-minute sit.